Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm Brett T-Bone Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, on demand at sportingjournalradio.com, and by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes. This week, we're talking mallards and mallard research. Bruce Davis has a very interesting mallard study going on in Minnesota where the ducks are outfitted with GPS tracking units. What are they hoping to learn? Well, Bruce will tell us. Joe Henry has a Lake of the Woods update for us. How's the fishing been up there? I'll give you a tip, a hint, it's been good. And what about the grouse and the waterfowl hunting? We'll find out. First, though, we're in the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters. I just like saying, I think that's kind of fun to say that, Tony. We're in the truck, and we are in the truck right now as we get ready for the reopening of the central zone for waterfowl hunting. Tony, I'll let you get through this four-way stop before we... Before I ask you the first question, we are literally in the truck right now. The central zone is reopening for the waterfowl season. We had the week off as our zone closed where we live, and instead of relaxing at home, we traveled north.
Yep, yeah, no days off, so we headed north and chased around some cranes, some geese, and some ducks.
That's right. We filmed for Prairie Sportsman. You'll be able to watch us hunt those geese, sandhill cranes, and sharptails while we were up there. And the hunting was pretty good. And, you know, we shot quite a few geese, actually. We got some people their first cranes. And I got to shoot sharptails. I'd never hunted sharptails before in Minnesota. And that went a lot better than I expected it to. And you're going to be able to see how we did on the next season of Prairie Sportsman starting in January of 2018. And Tony, I thought we'd be able to get you your first crane this year, but we weren't quite able to get it done.
No, and it wasn't for a lack of effort. We tried and shot at a few, and I pulled some feathers off of one in particular, but they're kind of a tough bird to knock down. They're actually a lot less body mass than you would think, and but it was still fun. And one of the other guys in the group that hadn't shot one got his first crane, and he was real jacked about that, so it was fun.
Yeah, and you know it's interesting because you can only hunt them in a certain part of the state, and I've been going up there for a number of years now. I've been able to get a couple, but they're just such neat birds. And anytime you can only shoot one a day, but every time you get a chance to hunt cranes, it's quite a bit of fun. And we got to eat some crane while we were up there too, Tony.
Yeah, we were at the DRC shop, and Corey cooked up some crane on the grill, and it was absolutely phenomenal. Never experienced a texture of meat like that for wild game before. The only way I could say is it basically melted in your mouth.
Yeah, it is the closest to beef that you can get out of birds like that sandhill crane. It's really good, and it's real easy to make as well. Corey Loeffler from the DRC Call Company grilled some up for us. It was delicious. We also had some sweet chili goose bites, and I would serve those to anyone who says they would never eat Canada goose because they'd never believe that this goose was that good.
Yeah, the goose bites were amazing, and that's kind of Corey's staple, one of his big things that he does up there, and a lot of people, you know, get to experience it. And I agree with you; most people wouldn't know that that's wild Canada goose.
You know, Corey also does something interesting with his ducks. When he cleans and cooks ducks, he does things a little bit differently.
Yeah, instead of just breasting them out like a lot of people would do, he actually plucks the feathers off the breast, leaves the skin and fat intact, and then breasts the bird out. So then when he cooks it, he has that skin and that fat still on the breast, and from what he says is it gives it a little bit more flavor.
We're going to have to try that this fall, and unfortunately, we didn't see as many mallards on this trip as we'd hoped. We spent a few days after Goose Fest traveling across northern Minnesota, and Tony, we really didn't see as many ducks as I thought we'd see up there.
No, that we didn't. It wasn't the usual numbers that we like to see, but you know they were in a pretty bad drought for quite a while before we went up there, and then they got a bunch of rain, so it kind of threw a little bit of a wrench in the mix, but it was still fun nonetheless. We chased birds around, and we shot plenty of geese, and not as many ducks as we'd like, but a lot of geese.
Yeah, and we did travel back down, like you said, to that Thief River Falls area, got on some geese, and got on one of the more fun, if not frustrating, redhead hunts that I've ever been on.
Yeah, we hunted a local big body of water that most people would know. I'm not going to mention names, but if you're familiar with Northwest Minnesota, I'm sure you could figure it out. But uh, we we went out there, we set up for divers, we were expecting to shoot a bunch of ringbills, and we ended up being covered up in redheads, and we shot our six-man limit of redheads in about 20 minutes and then sat and watched them decoy for about another hour, hour and a half after that. So it was a ton of fun, but it's hard to sit there and watch and not be able to pull the trigger.
Talking with Tony Crotty, we're in the truck. He's from Mid-Migration Outfitters. This is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in. And that big body of water up around that Thief River Falls area can be kind of a challenging place to hunt, especially when you're going out in the morning, when you're going out in the dark, right?
Yeah, it really can. We had a game plan. You know, we thought we had everything you know, set up in our head where we were going to go, how we were going to hunt. And then you start motoring around in the dark, and it's bull rush islands and then other islands that choke stuff off and refuge lines and things like that. So we motored around for about 40 minutes just to wind up right back where we started. And it worked out anyways. We ended up shooting a bunch of ducks and had a ton of fun either way. But it's definitely not for the faint of heart.
You know, and it was funny because we saw guys show up after we were getting ready to leave, and we're thinking to ourselves, boy, these guys are getting here late to the party. But as we were leaving, ducks were still buzzing around all over the place, and they could see exactly where they were going. So maybe going out in the afternoon wasn't such a bad idea. But when we did go out there, I mean, we had a great time. And once we found a spot, we had our redhead limit early, and we watched as they put on a show, decoying perfectly, some landing, some just passing through. We were hoping to see the ringbills that we'd seen there when we hunted there last year, but they just weren't around this year.
No, which is kind of odd this time of year in that northwest part of the state. Usually ringbills are pretty plentiful, and then when we talked to some of the locals and, you know, the refuge managers of the area, they said that a lot of ringbills were around. So we didn't see them, but we also heard other guys in the same body of water that we were on didn't hardly see any redheads. So we just might have been in the right place, right time for the redheads.
So we're heading back home to that western Minnesota, west central Minnesota, and that Lac Parle area, and reports back home, Tony, good news, have been pretty positive.
Correct. We're hearing big numbers of ducks around the area, so that's great, being that we got, you know, some duck hunters coming out and some hunts coming up. And then goose numbers are slowly building, and, you know, that's great news for us because, you know, the flights have been pretty late in recent years, so we're excited.
Man, and we're driving over the Pomme de Terre right now, and we had heard about all the rain down in this area last week, and you can look at it right there. The river is spilling over its banks.
Yeah, they got a lot of rain, and I think they said 6 to 8 inches of rain, so a lot of flooded fields, a lot of fast-moving water in the rivers and creeks around the area, but bad for the farmers, good for us.
Yeah, I do feel bad for the farmers. I was surprised to see some guys taking off beans when we were up there in northwestern Minnesota. There were a lot of combines with tracks running around those fields. Well, Tony, you talked about guiding. You talked about how we have some clients this weekend that we're going to take out for ducks and geese, and we have some openings during the week, and we've got some more weekend openings this year, don't we?
Yep. Yeah, we sure do. We do have openings available. So if anybody wants to get a hold of me, just give me a call or go to the website and we'll get you set up.
All right. In the truck with Tony Crotty. Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Sporting Journal Radio. It's Brett Amundson. Coming up, Bruce Davis tells us about some trophy ducks for waterfowlers here in Minnesota and GPS tracking data for researchers. It's all on the way here on Sporting Journal Radio, plus Joe Henry. We'll have a look at the Lake of the Woods area for fishing, grouse hunting, and also waterfowl hunting, and give us a little preview for ice fishing. It's all coming up on Sporting Journal Radio. Looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. This is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network or online at sportingjournalradio.com. You can listen there on demand or by subscribing to our podcasts in iTunes. Last year, I heard about a study. Well, I heard about the study because I ended up taking part in the study as I found out about a mallard tracking study here in Minnesota being done by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, specifically Bruce Davis. And he joins us now here on the radio show. Bruce, how's it going?
It's going well.
As somebody that spends a lot of time researching waterfowl, this has got to be about your favorite time of year, isn't it?
It is. It's a fun time of year for sure.
Now, did you always like waterfowl? Did you want to be a waterfowl research scientist, or did you just kind of fall into it?
I've been a hunter for my whole life, and when I got into college, as I progressed through college, my focus became more waterfowl based, and it's just built itself from there. Just keep adding on more research work, and now I'm pretty much all I do is waterfowl work. So,
you know, it's funny. I love to bow hunt. I love to pheasant hunt. I really enjoy it, but there's just something about waterfowl, and it consumes all of my time in the fall. It's like I don't even have time to bow hunt or pheasant hunt because I'm too busy scouting or you know, chasing ducks and geese around or taking a nap in between chasing ducks and geese around. So I get it. There's something about ducks that I really enjoy. And, you know, you hear about guys that waterfowl hunt a lot and they shoot a bird that's got a band on it and everybody freaks out. It's a trophy bird for them. And then you hear about some of the bigger trophies in the waterfowling world, whether it's a tarsal band or a neck collar or even a backpack, like a radio transmitter or GPS tracker. And last year I was lucky enough to shoot a mallard with a tracking unit on it. And I was like, holy smokes, what the heck is this thing? And found out that you were the guy behind it. This is such a neat study, and it's happening again here in Minnesota. I want you to tell our listeners about it. First of all, tell us about, this is a study about mallards?
Correct. Yep, we're studying mallards. We're putting radio tracking units or GPS units on mallards, and we're able to get some information that way about where these birds are located, how they move, and what kind of habitats they use.
Now, this is technically year number three, but really last year was the first year that you really got some quantifiable data. Is that right?
That's correct. So, yeah, we made one attempt at this study a couple years ago. Didn't do very well. Went back to the drawing board. Last year we were able to get a fair amount of data, and then this year we are we marked birds again in the weeks leading up to the hunting season here this year.
And this is the stuff that really excites me about waterfowl hunting, is learning about their habits and their migration patterns and their feeding habits and you know, just where they go, where they spend the night, where they feed at, what type of cover, what type of food, what time are they going, how far do they travel. I mean, yeah, I love putting a band on my lanyard, don't get me wrong, but I enjoy hearing the research side of it more. And obviously, when you get banding data, you can find out a few things. But boy, you can really get some precise data by doing it with these radio transmitters, right?
Right. So we use the banding data. It's more coarse. We know where the birds are marked, and we know where they die, and we can calculate some things about their survival rates and understand their harvest rates better just using the banding data. That data is all great. But it doesn't tell you a whole lot about what the birds do in between the when they're marked and when they're harvested. So this the data we get out of these tracking units gives us information on these birds, their habits, what type of habitats they're in, what type of habitats they're using at night versus during the day. It gives us some information about the timing of their actual emigration. So when these birds fly off on their fall migration, when they head south, it gives us a lot of, it fills in a lot of the blanks, that we can't get from banding data alone.
Bruce Davis is our guest here on Sporting Journal Radio. He's a research scientist with the Minnesota DNR, talking about waterfowl and a new mallard study, a relatively new mallard study. This is realistically year number two in this study. And tell people about what you do. You look for 120 mallards, right?
Right. So, well, this year we marked 90 birds. Last year we marked 120 birds. This year we're using a slightly different radio package. So we're actually marking fewer birds, but we're getting more data out of those packages. So we marked 90 birds this summer. We scatter those transmitters out throughout the state as much as possible. We have banding crews working all over the state of Minnesota. And so I travel to those wherever those banding crews are working, and we mark some mallards with these tracking units to complement our banded sample.
And last year you did the 120, you did 40 adult hens and then 80 juvenile drakes, and that was
right.
And it was two different types of transmitters. Did you do something similar this year?
Right. So, well, this year we used, so last year those tracking units, we used two different types of transmitters. The one type was a GPS log only unit that the hunter actually had to kill. We had to get the bird, get the tracking unit back and get the data off the unit that way. And the other type of unit would log location data and then transmit that data to the satellite. And so this year we're using just one type of unit. We're using the GPS units that transmit data up to the satellites. So we discovered after last year, we're actually getting more, it's more cost effective, to use those, GPS Argos units and have units that transmit their data. It's a little more upfront cost on the units, but we end up getting more data out of them that way.
So you weren't getting enough transmitters sent back to you then, basically?
Well, we were getting transmitters back, but the cost-benefit ratio, it turns out slightly better in the favor of the units that transmit to satellites.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I was just going to ask for kind of a recap then of what type of info did, just before we talk more about this year's study, let's talk more about last year's. What did you learn from having these tracking units on mallards from last year?
Okay. We ended up with some very specific information about, the timing of emigration from the state. So the timing of the birds leaving the state. Last year, the birds that we marked in far northern Minnesota left at a very similar time to the birds that we marked in far southern Minnesota. It's not really something that we would normally expect, but last year we had, if you remember, last year fall lasted for a long time. It was a late freeze-up in northern Minnesota. It was one of the few years where you were actually able to hunt open water in northern Minnesota all the way up until the end of the season. Normally it doesn't happen for us. Normally it freezes up here in northern Minnesota. So we expected there to be more difference in the timing of migration, but there wasn't, because all that freeze up happened so late last year that it just changed the chronology when those birds leave. And so it gave us some information on that. We have some information about how far these birds actually move when they make their migration flight. So what we found in last year's data was that the birds tended to make very large migrations when they moved. The average migration flight was over 400 kilometers.
That's insane to me. When the Ducks finally decided they wanted to leave Minnesota, they didn't just go, we'll go a couple hours south. They went 400 kilometers.
Correct. So when the birds finally decided to move, they made large-scale movements, which is probably not something that we would normally expect from mallards. It's not really what I expected the data to look like, but that's what it looks like. So we don't know if that was because of the late onset of winter that we had, or if that was a normal thing. We're hoping that this year we'll have some different weather conditions. I don't wish for us to have an early winter. Wishing that on anybody, but I guess I would like to see it more normal.
Sure.
And see so we can have some comparisons in the data on what they do in a more normal year. Rather than a late onset of winter like we had last year.
Of course. Bruce Davis is our guest. He's a research scientist with the Minnesota DNR talking about a study about tracking mallards and their habits, when they migrate out of the state, how far they go. But also, you learned a lot about just feeding patterns. Tell us more about what you learned about that.
Right. So we were able to, all the location data that we have is GPS quality location data. So we learned some things about how the birds used marsh and crop habitats. In southern Minnesota, we saw large use of crop habitats at night, something that has been seen in other species of birds in their wintering grounds. We didn't know to what extent that occurred in Minnesota.
Now, when you say at night, are you meaning like overnight or just in the evening, or what do you mean by at night?
Yeah, overnight. So the locations are set at random times, both during the day and at night. So, just our night location cohort is just any bird, after sunset and before sunrise the next morning. And so these birds are using crop fields we're using crop fields for feeding at a much higher rate at night than they were during the day.
All right, Bruce Davis, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. We'll have more with Bruce coming up as we learn more about this mallard tracking study here in Minnesota. Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, we're back, Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson, talking about waterfowl in the state of Minnesota. How can we learn more about what our waterfowl are doing out there, specifically mallards? And I'm assuming a lot of this has to do with how our season is structured in Minnesota with the season splits, with the northern zone, the central zone, and the southern zone, and how mallards may move across those zones. Bruce Davis is the man in charge of this. He's been out there marking birds with GPS tracking units. units on them. This is essentially year two of this study. There's 90 mallards that have these tracking units on them. And Bruce, is this going to kind of help the DNR figure out if these zones are working or just help them kind of determine how the regulations are set?
Right. Well, one of the things that definitely will tell us is how much movement we have between hunting zones in the state and see if our hunting pressure is causing birds to move out of one zone as those seasons open and close in different zones. I forgot the rest of your question. Sorry.
No, that's all right. I was just asking if this study eventually is going to kind of help the DNR how their regulations are set.
Yeah, so eventually this data all gets used in the evaluation of our season, our timing of our seasons, and how regulations are set. When the structure of opening and closing seasons in different hunting zones occurs, all those sort of things, all those sort of decisions that are made down the road, we're hoping to better inform those decisions. So give our guys in charge of setting those policies a little more data to work with.
I've talked to a few guys that are kind of sort of influential in that area, and there's been some talk about extending the season in Minnesota or going later, whether it's a long, 70-day or a longer split or whatever. I don't think we'll see longer splits, but a 70-day season. Would you be in favor of that, and would any data from this study help determine whether or not that would make sense for us?
I'm not sure. I think our 60-day season is something that's set by the flyway, so it's not likely that the state of Minnesota will go act on its own and have a longer season.
Sure.
But what we may do is it may rearrange the timing of the season in some zones. If for instance we knew that birds were staying later in the southern zone or central zone, or the northern zone for that matter, there's a possibility that the seasons could be altered to better target birds that are in the state, to change things to the hunter's advantage as far as timing of migration goes.
Sure. So when this study came about, was this your brainchild? Did you come up with this idea? And whose idea was it, and why? What justification was given for it? What did you hope to find out?
Yep. So this study was I guess my idea, or you can blame me for this study. I started working this job as the banding coordinator. And that was the real reason that I started down this road towards this study. I wanted to be able to fill in some of the gaps that banding data leaves us. I knew some of the started looking at the banding data, could see some of the patterns in bird movement and bird harvest rates and all that sort of thing there, but. Of course, when you start looking at data, you just get more questions, and I realized the only way to answer those questions was going to be to have to track some of these birds' individual movements.
One thing I thought was interesting with that duck that I had shot last year, on opening day, it had flown 5 or 6 miles away from. It was on public water, and after opening weekend, it had flown to another. I think it was a state wildlife management area, about 5-6 miles away. It stayed there for a couple of days, and eventually, it flew back. It never really left the area for too long, but it was kind of interesting to see that it did leave. I'm assuming due to hunting pressure that opening weekend.
Right, probably. We definitely see some increased movement of birds during the early part of the season, when especially on opening weekend, when there's a lot of disturbance going on. There's a lot of extra people out there. There's just a lot more activity in the marsh. Probably an area that the bird has been using for a while and hasn't seen a person for for quite some time, all of a sudden has multiple boats in it. So, sure. You know, the birds react to that. And you know, kind of that's kind of the pattern I saw with these marked birds through most of the year last year, is that, you know, they get disturbed. They move around until they find a place where they don't get disturbed anymore. And then they spend a long time there. That's kind of the way ducks act during the hunting season. And that's been my experience in other parts of the country with other marked birds as well. You know, birds will move around, you know, as long as they're being pressured, as long as they've got people around, and then they'll finally find a place where it's just harder for people to get to them, or just has the better habitat that they like, and they'll camp out there for as long as they can.
Sure. That makes sense too. So say somebody shoots one this year, they find one of these GPS tracking units on it. What next?
Okay. So they will find my phone number on that tracking unit. And we'd like them to call, us and let us know that they've, harvested that bird. We would like to get those tracking units back from people. So as an incentive, we give away $50 gift cards in return for one of the tracking units. I can get that tracking unit back. I can get the data off of it, and I can actually reuse that. I can put new harness material on it and reuse that tracking unit again next year. So, you know, there's a big advantage to the department for getting those tracking units back.
And if somebody, say, wants to mount a bird with a tracking unit on it, you can actually send them a replica, right?
That's right. I have some replicas on hand. If somebody shoots a bird with a tracking unit on it, and you know, wants a replica unit to use on taxidermy or whatever else, you know, just to have as a keepsake, we can send them a replica unit. It looks just like the unit that they have on the bird that they've harvested, only it doesn't have the actual electronics inside the unit.
Which is a great idea. And I hear you actually make those replicas. Is that right? Did I hear that?
Yeah, I found out last year that I was going to be making those in the shop here myself. So, yep. So, you know, we do what we need to do to get the data we get.
Well,
so.
it's great. I just find this stuff fascinating, Bruce. I could talk to you about it all day long, but I better let you go. But I appreciate the time here today, and I appreciate you just giving all the info. And it's a neat study. Good luck with everything. I hope everybody sends their transmitters back into you. I know if I end up with another one this year, I'll my friends will probably string me up somewhere. So I, as much as I'd like to shoot another one, maybe we'll give them a chance, or give it a couple of years before I shoot another one. But I was glad to be part of the study, and good luck with everything. And thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Okay. Thanks, Brett. And good luck hunting this year.
Well, if you want to learn more about the GPS tracking study and see what they look like, watch the new season of Prairie Sportsman starting in January, coming up here in a couple of months. If you want to see any of last season's episode of Prairie Sportsman, visit prairiesportsman.org. We've got some really cool stuff planned for next year, including a prairie chicken hunt, a sharptail hunt, a sandhill crane hunt. Plus, we'll show you all the ways conservation efforts are paying off for all those birds and everything else here in Minnesota, and what you can do to help preserve all those things that we enjoy doing in the outdoors. So go visit prairiesportsman.org for more information, or go to your TV guide, your TV listing, and search for Prairie Sportsman on your TV guide. You should be able to get it all over the state of Minnesota on Direct and Dish Network and various cable and other TV providers. You can also watch them online, too, at prairiesportsman.org. All right, before the show is over, we've got Joe Henry, who will talk Lake of the Woods. He's next on Sporting Journal Radio. Having us a good time. High five every time they fly by. Robo duck in the middle of a spread. Got sausage on the grill and a piece of white bread in the duck blind. Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. With 2 million acres of hunting land and water to choose from, the Thief River Falls area offers hunters choices of deer, elk, bear, grouse, woodcock, and sandhill cranes. This is also a growing area for duck and goose populations, making it an untapped bonanza for waterfowlers. In any season, Thief River Falls is truly a hunter's paradise. Visit Thief River Falls for an authentic hunting experience in a variety of comfortable lodging amenities. They're pet friendly too. Plan your trip today at www.visittrf.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, welcome back to Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online and on demand at sportingjournalradio.com, and also by subscribing to our podcasts in your iTunes. Many different ways to listen to this radio show. And it seems like Lake of the Woods is one of those places where everybody from all parts of the state goes to. They go up there and fish. Of course, the locals fish there. And I always hear about people from, you know, whether it's the Twin Cities going up to Lake of the Woods or out where I'm at in west central Minnesota, southern Minnesota, they're always traveling to Lake of the Woods because it's such a great destination. And the fishing is, you call it a walleye factory because that's pretty much what it is. And we got Joe Henry, of course, back on the show with us here this week. Joe, how are things?
Things are wonderful. The fall bite is on. The migration's happening. People are shooting grouse. Life is good.
Yeah, you know, it's the best time of the year, if you ask me. I know everybody talks about how great summer is. And, of course, you know, you can go up and fish out of a boat on Lake of the Woods, and that's all fine and great. But I love fall. There's so many things you can do, and, of course, you can fish in the fall. And we talk about this all the time this time of year, Joe. It's always a dilemma for me. Do I take the fishing rod? Do I take the shotgun? And we just spent the last week or so in northern Minnesota, not far from Lake of the Woods up there, and we had fishing poles with, we had shotguns with, and I'll tell you what, we shot Canada geese, we shot sandhill cranes, we shot sharp-tailed grouse, we shot snow geese, we shot a bunch of ducks, puddle ducks like mallards and pintails, and we shot diving ducks, redheads, and ringbills, and the only thing we didn't really get up there, Joe, was a rough grouse, and I mean, there's so many different things you can do up there, and we had a great week up there. Is what I'm saying. The possibilities are endless right now.
Yeah, and you know, I think you were over in that Thief River Falls area with my friend Laura Stengrum, and you know, that's a wonderful area. You know, certainly part of the flyaway, and there's a lot of, you know, northern Minnesota, the northwest part of the state. Boy, there's a lot of opportunities, and you know, same kind of things happen in our neck of the woods too, Brett. You know. We just had the Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Writers Conference this past week. So we did have a lot of people in the field that I was working directly with. And, you know, it was really kind of cool. The goose hunters, I mean, there's so many geese right now in our area. And I don't know if people realize, but, you know, Lake of the Woods County has about 40,000 acres of agriculture. And, you know, between the lake and that much agricultural land, it's a hotbed for geese. And, you know, we haven't had cold enough weather to push those geese out of there yet. So the folks that went goose hunting, and of course they, you know, we had guides take them out. And these really weren't guides. They were people that hunt geese on their own and were nice enough to take our guests out. But they limit it out by 7:30 every morning. In fact, it's kind of cool. If you go to the Lake of the Woods Tourism's Facebook page, we have some video from Ducks Unlimited, and they were up there with the Aglo conference, and they show geese, you know, coming into the decoy spreads. In fact, at one point in time, they're done so early shooting, they had their limits, that they actually let geese land around them. They're walking around their blinds, which you know, is really, really kind of a neat experience to happen. And then, you know, it's funny, we had a couple of really, really avid duck hunters up at the Lake of the Woods this week. And, you know, these guys, one of them came up to me, Brett, and he showed me his phone, and he had a map on his phone. He said, "Now, Joe, if I'd go over here, I can see that this farmer owns this land here along the lake, but this is all public hunting. And I just went out and scouted it. Man, I had ducks and geese flying right over my head." So sure enough, you know, he went out there the next morning and never hunted that area. And they limited out on ducks. They had multi-species. Hmm. And they'd always get a few geese as kind of a bonus. And it just goes to show, you know, when you have access to, especially duck hunting, you know, duck hunting is one of those sports that, you know, there's a lot of public land, a lot of public waters a person can get out and hunt on.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe Henry, our guest here from Lake of the Woods and Sporting Journal Radio. And I'll tell you what, Joe, Lake of the Woods, shooting divers up there. We talked about it this past week. Like I said, we were close to you. We spent some time at Thief River Falls. And then we even went north and got up close to Canada up there, eh? And shot some ducks and geese up there, too. And I'll tell you what, we almost came over to Lake of the Woods. We weren't far away. We almost came over there, and we've been talking about it. It's kind of one of those Minnesota bucket list trips for us, is to come up and shoot divers on Lake of the Woods.
Yeah, you know, right now, so right now we're getting some divers. You know, we're getting everything from, you know, woodies and teal. There's still some around, shooting mallards, some bluebills, ringbills, some redheads, certainly a lot of geese, mainly Canadians. Actually, the real diver shoot hasn't even happened yet.
Sure.
The cold weather hasn't kicked them down yet. And, you know, I would say, I mean, Lake of the Woods is good early season, but boy, I tell you, it really shines for the divers flying down. And, you know, and it's really fun. Of course, you know, the migration and duck hunting in general, when you're talking about divers, is always about timing. Mm-hmm. You know, when those birds come down. And, but I'll say this, it is sure fun when you are hunting either up at the northwest angle amongst the islands up there, or, you know, hunting down south, maybe in 4 Mile Bay or Zippel Bay. And, you know, a lot of times you'll talk to anglers going up to the northwest angle fishing, and they'll say, "Man, there's like 2,000 bluebills staged up at the angle." and what'll happen is on certain days, you know, they'll break off in the flocks of like 15 to 20, fly across the water that 40 miles, and they'll stage again in 4 Mile Bay. Man, if you're set up, you know, you have to compete with that big flock that's out in the middle of 4 Mile Bay. But other than that, you get those flocks breaking off and coming into your deeks, and they're nice numbers of ducks coming in for a good shoot.
Gosh, I want to do it so bad. And I know we've talked about it, Joe. I've been trying to put together either some sort of cast and blast, whether it's come up and shoot divers in the morning and then go out and fish for Lake of the Woods walleyes, or get up there and walk the woods for rough grouse and then go fish Lake of the Woods walleyes. or you know, I mean, just a lot of different combinations that you can do up there. And from what I've been hearing, the grouse hunting's been pretty good this year.
Yeah, it has. You know, it has. And we knew it'd be in an upswing. You know, DNR told us that. And, of course, it's proven out. You know, it was so nice because we had the local Lake of the Woods chapter of the Rough Grouse Society provided a number of their members that are up in that area as guides for our GLOW guests this past week. And, you know, they took them out to primarily Beltrami Island State Forest. And, yeah, I don't know if everybody realizes, but, you know, you get volunteer organizations like the Rough Grouse Society, the Lake of the Woods chapter, and, you know, these guys and gals are out creating trails, walking trails and such. They're clearing trails. So on their own time, on a weekend, they're out, you know, cleaning up the trails at trees that have fallen, brush and things, making those trails real nice and walkable. And then they're helping out with, you know, like we have guests come to town like we did. And man, I talked to a number of our guests that went to grouse hunting with those guys and gals, and they just had an awesome time. You know, part of it was seeing grouse, shooting grouse. That's part of it. But, you know, the other part of it was spending time in the woods, understanding the resource, seeing what kind of, you know, trees and plants are out there, what kind of food the grouse are eating this time of year. I mean, there's so much more to it than just killing the grouse, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, it's funny. I joke to some of my grouse hunting friends about it. And like Matt Soberg is a friend of mine, and he's with Rough Grouse Society. And they do so much work for conservation and habitat to help out the hunters. But it's funny. It's like it's the one organization where it's full of members, full of hunting members that are just as happy if they don't shoot a grouse when they go hunting as they are if they do shoot a grouse. I mean, obviously, they like to see a lot of birds, but putting one in the bag isn't always the number one goal for those guys.
Well, you're right. And one kind of cute, cool story is, the president of the Rough Grouse Society, Chuck Lindner, up there, he co-chairs it with Jared Olson. And, he brought a guest out from the state of Virginia, Ken Pratt, and they went out grouse hunting. And they saw some birds and stuff like that. That was great. But when they went out, and Chuck has a renovated Scout, they went out and nice. I know there was some, he had a little meat and cheese tray when they're done, and they enjoyed a refreshment, kind of a special refreshment. It almost reminded me of almost like fly angling where, just kind of that culture behind it. That's just, it's just kind of neat. And certain people, they appreciate the experience and some of the different aspects of it rather than just the hunt. That makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, Joe Henry, Lake of the Woods, we got just a couple of minutes left here. We should probably talk a little bit about fishing, suppose, up there on the big lake, and it's been pretty good.
Yeah, let me give it to you in a nutshell. People this time of year for the fall bite are oftentimes talking about the shiner run, hence the walleye run on the Reading River, and the run is on. I mean, we've had shiners in the river now for a while. Our guests were fishing the Reading River with great success this last week. Not a lot of big fish in the river, but a lot of eaters. A lot of eaters in the river right now as we speak. They're staged out in front of the gap in the lake. They're in 4 Mile Bay, and they're up and down the river, all the way from Wheeler's Point, which is the mouth of the river, up to Birchdale. Then, of course, along the south shore, areas such as Morris Point, Zipple Bay out in front of the shoreline there, Long Point, Arneson's Rocky Point. And then up at the northwest angle, Brett, some folks are having 100 fish walleye days up at the northwest angle. Certainly, the crappies had the feed bag on. Crappies are being caught on the Ontario side of Lake of the Woods. Mm-hmm. A lot of our guides will guide guests this time of year. And some people are already starting to troll for the muskies. Typically in the fall, you can get away with trolling them because those muskies are hanging out in near shore areas, where there's underwater points, neck down areas where there's current, and also just good structure. And so it's all happening right now, and it's really a neat time to be up there.
Well, if people want to get up there this fall, or if they want to start booking their ice fishing trips, because I'm sure some of those dates are getting booked up already. Luckily, you got a ton of resorts up there to choose from. Where can they find out more information about Lake of the Woods?
Check out our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
All right, and also my thanks to Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters, and then, of course, Bruce Davis from the Minnesota DNR, the waterfowl research scientist there, telling us about that Mallard GPS study. If you missed any part of the show, you'll be able to listen to it on demand at sportingjournalradio.com, or you can subscribe to our show in the podcast section of iTunes. The show has been brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism, by Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake, and by Mid-Migration Outfitters, and of course, our thanks to Visit Thief River Falls. And thank you for listening. I'm Brett T-Bone Amundson saying, make sure you take some time to spend some time in the outdoors this week.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.